The door is open, the welcome mat is out, and this is It's All About Relationships on Vivid Life Radio. My name is Edie Weinstein, and together we'll be exploring what relationships are really all about. Sometimes they're light and playful, sometimes messy and challenging. Our guests are transformational teachers and authors, artists and musicians in this realm that makes life so sweet. So sit back and relax and enjoy the ride.
Welcome to It's All About Relationships. I'm your host, Edie Weinstein. And tonight, like every night, I bring to you people that I admire, whose work I've loved, and that I think do good service in the world. And this couple that are waiting on the other end of the line to share their insights with us is absolutely no exception. I don't recall how we connected, but I'm so glad we did. So here's a question for you. Do you believe in once upon a time and happily ever after when it comes to romantic relationships? A lot of people do, and sometimes it gets them in trouble. So my guests tonight are a married couple, Linda and Charlie Bloom, and what they're going to be talking about is the idea of happily ever after and other myths about love. They're seminar leaders, they're authors, they're psychotherapists, and experts in the field of human relations. One of their books, which I have here in front of me, is called 101 Things I Wish I Knew When I Got Married, Simple Lessons to Make Love Last. Now, there were things that I wish I had known when I got married 28 years ago, and a lot of people apparently like this book because they've sold over 100,000 copies. That's pretty amazing. So, Linda and Charlie, welcome to the show.
Hi, Edie. I'm delighted to be here.
Me too.
Thank you. And hi, Charlie.
Hi.
Hi. So, how do you define love? It's a pretty small word, but with big implications.
Well, I define love as an action. And it is a feeling, too, and people tend to emphasize the part of it that's a feeling. But I always want to put the accent on the action part. I define it as love is an action that shows our devotion to another person. Mm. And the reason that I like to define it as a verb, an action-oriented verb, is I sometimes see couples in trouble where there is a lot of love inside, in their heart. They think loving thoughts, but they don't necessarily speak their love, not nearly enough, or show it in acts of service in ways the other person experiences the love.
Mm-hmm. So it has to be concrete. It's not just this nebulous, ooh, kind of feeling. It's what you do with it is what I'm hearing.
Yes. We need to be active in the ways that we show the people that we love how much we love them, how important mm-hmm. they are to us, how valuable they are in our life, how they enrich our life. And there are so many ways to do that. And I can't stand waste. And I think it's such a waste when people feel a lot of love, but they're not versed in demonstrating it in a way that the other person is deeply nourished by it.
Mm-hmm. So, Charlie, how do you demonstrate love in your relationship with Linda?
Well, let me count the ways.
Good.
I think one of the main ways that I do is by being very curious about how she would like me to love her. And I don't mean that in a generic way, like tell me how you want to be loved and that's what I'll give you. I mean by tuning into her and checking in with her periodically, frequently, just to see, how you're doing. And particularly at those times when she may be, having difficulties or challenged with something or, needing some support, just letting her know that I'm here. And I'm very interested in knowing how, if any way that she can see, I might be able to be helpful to her right now. Just by having that intention, having that desire, having that curiosity, expressing it, and then being open to receiving what her input is. One of the things about Linda that I really love is that when I'm not able or willing to provide her what it is that she wants, because after all, I'm asking her what would be helpful, but I can't guarantee her that I'm always going to be able to provide it. Mm-hmm. Is that she can say she can take no for an answer, and she doesn't sulk or pout or get angry or withdraw, but she can accept that because I think that there's enough trust in our relationship so that we both know that we're always giving what we can, and sometimes we're not always able to give what the other person would like.
And when that happens, how do you negotiate that?
Well, I'm so abundant nowadays that I got plenty of reserve. And if he's preoccupied with other things for a while, I have total trust that as soon as he can show up and be there with me and for me in the way that I want to be cared for and valued and loved, that he will. That hasn't always been true. Back in the old days, I had a lot of doubts about how deeply I was loved and how important I was in his life. And so it's been a journey for us to be able to have so many deposits in karma savings and loan that we've got a really abundant account. So if there's some times when we're not connected and when he's preoccupied with things or I am, we can sail through those very, very easily.
Yeah. So how long ago, back in the old days, you guys have been together a long time. Can you share with the audience how long you've been together?
Yeah, we've been together since bell-bottom pants.
Okay. And fringe love beads and Woodstock, and a little bit past Woodstock, a little bit after Woodstock.
Yeah, college students, hippies, you know, and we go back 4 decades plus. So we've been through many incarnations inside this marriage, and there were some rough times when we thought we weren't going to make it and that the family was going to break up, but we paid attention and we learned a lot, and Charlie thinks we should get the trophy for the most improved.
Oh, sounds good. I'll be happy to send it to you. That would be marvelous. So before we go to break, which is going to be in a few minutes, I'm just curious, as we're setting up for the myth thing, why do people believe in happily ever after? Where did that idea originate?
I'm not sure exactly where it originates. Probably in the human condition, you know, because we all want to believe things are going always out the way we hope they will. Despite the fact that evidence continually comes in that our plans frequently do not create the outcomes that we expect them to. And that's where, you know, myths come in. You know, what a myth is really a collective belief that a large portion of a culture holds that hasn't necessarily been confirmed through evidence. So it's not that a myth isn't true. It's that we don't know that it's true. But there's a desire, I think, that we all have to really understand what can't always be comprehensible. Love, you know, you asked us what love meant a little earlier, and it's one of those things that's very hard to define, and because it's more than just concept. It's an experience. It's one of those things that you know it when you feel it, know it when it's there, but you can't actually describe it. And a myth is, I think, a way to bridge the gap between where I am now and what I want to understand that I don't understand. It's sort of like a shortcut to finding out what the truth is. It allows us, it enables us to not have to do the work really find out what actually is true. And so we hook into truly accepted collective beliefs that enable us to just hold certain assumptions that make us feel more secure, safer, and not to have to work so hard to figure out what actually my experience, what actually is the case, what does this really mean?
Well, we're going to find out and after the break a little more about that. We're going to elaborate on that. So, folks, what I'm going to encourage you to do is to go to Charlie and Linda's website to learn more about the amazing work they do. It's BloomWork, one word, B-L-O-O-M, work.com. And you'll find out about their books, the events that they do, the wonderful writing, the workshops. It's a treasure trove. So I'll catch you on the other side after the break.
What does your vivid life look like? What does it feel like to be living a vivid life every single day? How do you start? What's the first step for you personally to make the shift that you've been seeking? Find out now. Vivid Life. It's a happier, healthier, wealthier state of being. Get there today by following us on Facebook, Twitter, or subscribing to our free inspirations in your inbox at vividlife.me.
Are you ready to create the life of your dreams, filled with joy and abundance? Imagine surrounding yourself with the world's top spiritual teachers and visionaries that will teach you their secrets to living a successful, healthy, and joyful life. Join Iyanla Von Zandt, Marianne Williamson, Greg Braden, Neil Donald Walsh, Michael Beckwith, and over 25 life-changing best-selling authors at this year's Celebrate Your Life Conference in beautiful Phoenix, Arizona. Visit celebrateyourlife.org for more information. That's celebrateyourlife.org. And reserve your seat now.
Your soul's calling is the answer to someone else's prayer. Are you ready to be that answer? Dr. Laurel Geis is a spiritual author, speaker, and mentor dedicated to helping you live your soul's calling. Go to laurelgeis.com now and sign up for Laurel's newsletter. Let's get you going with classes, mentoring, and support to ignite your soul-guided life today.
You're listening to Vivid Life Radio Talk Radio that connects you to the most current, optimistic, and inspiring conversations on the planet. Get ready to be catapulted into your happiest, healthiest, and wealthiest life ever. Go to vividlife.me. That's vividlife.me for details on our previous and upcoming conversations with the world's brightest minds sharing their wisdom for happier, healthier, and wealthier lives.
Hi, welcome back to the next portion of It's All About Relationships. I'm your host, Edie Weinstein, and my guests are Linda and Charlie Bloom, who are relationship experts. And by virtue of being married since the 1970s, they are also experts in their own relationship. And their website is bloomwork.com, bloomwork.com. And before the break, we were talking about the happily ever after myths. What are some other myths that couples believe that don't always work? They don't always play out the way they'd like them to.
Well, one of the things that we've often heard over the years is you just got to lower your expectations. And you set yourself up for trouble if you reach too high. And we don't believe in that. We believe in having a big, grand relationship. And as long as you have, will match your expectation, you're okay. If you of intentionality and commitment and an orientation about personal growth, both your own growth and the growth of your relationship, you can reach high and go for the gold. But you have to have an action orientation. You have to take a high level of responsibility. The realization that your relationship is supposed to be flushing to the surface your unfinished business for you to take a look at it. Old wounds and traumas from your past, distrust that you have, areas of sensitivity, it's all supposed to go poking around with that unfinished business so you can get complete, so you can have some understanding, so you can grow into a skilled communicator and be more forgiving and accepting and allowing and proactive in negotiating for your needs. So we always tell people, let your vision be big. And busy. Roll up your sleeves and get to work and create an agreement and a contract with each other that you're going to use what relationships will toss up for you as a growth opportunity.
So our relationship, is there always unfinished business in relationships because they're ongoing?
Well, it seems like for many people there is, but it is not inevitable that there will be. You know, we call unfinished business, another term for it is incompletions. And an incompletion is anything that is unfinished or unresolved or unclear to one or both people in a relationship. And a lot of us develop a tolerance of these loose ends hanging out that we don't want to deal with because, you know, nobody wants to upset the apple cart and a worms, who knows what's going to come out of it. And we've got a lot of rationalization to justify having unfinished business. the reality, to deal with unfinished business, we have to have a certain level of to be able to work out the inevitable difference. So it requires ability to accept that, yes, these things happen, but they don't have to linger. They don't have to characterize the relationship. They can be with in ways that keep our house clean. That it's a way of doing relational housekeeping. And
I was just going to say that, kind of like preventive maintenance. It's sort of like if you clean a room up,
exactly.
It'll only stay clean if you keep up with it. Is that kind of like that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's what we want to do. And we want to lower our threshold, our tolerance for being able to accept things that are not finished. So that's one of the things that we talk to couples about, is how important it is to see to it that you don't allow these things to build up and to accumulate.
Mm-hmm. So you talk about the idea of conscious combat. Can you explain that?
Mm-hmm. It's a very important skill that every couple needs, because we are very different from each other usually. We believe in the opposites attract theory. We usually complements attract. And because we have different histories, we have different areas of activity, we have different, sometimes even different values, we need to know how to gracefully negotiate the differences. Because they're inevitable. Conflict, especially conflict, is not inevitable. Very defined way. So that's what we're talking about when we talk about, is we allow the differences, we acknowledge the differences, we find a way to be respectful of the differences, and drop below the irritability and the resentment and the anger, because underneath there's always either fear or there's pain or there's both. And when people can drop, fairly understanding and
are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. And actually, this is perfect, because in relationships, sometimes we lose touch with each other. I lost you for a minute, and communication gets garbled.
Yeah.
I find that this happens on the show, you know, and only, I think from what Shane tells me, only on my show do these things happen. So it's kind of, you know, it's fortuitous, I guess. So your book, 101 Things I Wish I Knew, what are just a few things that you guys wish you knew before you got married?
Well, one of the things that I'm kind of glad I didn't know is how challenging relationships can be. Because, and I'll be honest with you, if I knew exactly what Linda and I were going to go through in order to get where we are now, I would have been very reluctant to have made that commitment. So I'm glad that I didn't know. But another thing that I wish I had known that would have made it a lot easier is how much more I could experience, how much greater my life could be if I was in relationship with a truly loving, committed partner. No idea what was possible. My imagination was that, if I get married and, you know, we can get along reasonably well, we don't fight too much, and, you know, we can pay our bills, that's like as good as it's. Well, what I have found is that, like, on a scale of 1 to 10, that's about a 2.1. And what's possible is so much more than that. And I know that now, but nobody convinced me that that was true unless I had experienced that.
So you can experience over-the-top love, and it's not always going to be blissful. It's not always going to be hugs and kisses and roses.
Exactly.
And one of the things you talked about is, and this may be one of your workshops, love, sex, and intimacy. How are they intertwined? Is it possible to experience all three of them in the same relationship?
Absolutely possible. In fact, I believe a lot of people who are in my high respect and high regard in the field feel that the best sex people have is when the emotional intimacy and the love is strong. So there is a way in which they dovetail together and they work together when a person feels met, when they feel understood, when they feel deeply loved, when they feel that there isn't any taboo subject, that they can bring up any material and that the partner is going to hold it with them. That's a very deep level of intimacy. And there's a certain feeling of safety and security that comes with that. And so they all feed into each other. And it's a piece of work, you know, to open up that much and to let yourself be seen, warts and all, to be transparent, even with our feelings of inadequacy and our feelings of insecurity and our wounds and our grief and our wildest dreams for our life.
So it's about holding space for yourself and your partner to be able to live full out, is what I'm hearing.
And I think that's absolutely true. I think that's one of the biggest challenges that makes relationships so fulfilling but also so challenging is that we have to do two things that seem on the surface to be mutually exclusive. We have to be absolutely committed to the well-being of the relationship and dedicated to our partner without losing ourselves, to hold mm-hmm. an equal level of commitment to our own self-care, to our own experience, to our own vision, our own intentions, but not at the expense of the relationship, and that the relationship cannot be at the expense of our relationship with ourselves.
Beautiful.
That's not an easy thing.
No. And I think, you gave us a lot of wisdom, but I think the takeaway for me, and I was going to ask you this, but that already answered my question, is that that's one big secret of a great relationship, is to be fully and wholly honoring your own individuality, your uniqueness, and honoring the shared entity that you become when you commit to a relationship with another human being. So neither is at the expense of the other.
Right.
That's
bang
the big takeaway.
Right on target.
And it's possible.
Yeah.
You know, the
Thank
second
you.
Book we wrote, Secrets of Great Relationships, where we interviewed these 50 couples, the happiest couples that we could find, one of the themes that kept coming through interviews that we did with them is they were champs in both areas. Mm-hmm. They were terrific about self-care, and they were terrific about being tuned into other and care of other. They were taking responsibility for their own happiness, and they were concerned about their partner's happiness. It really does require to have a terrific relationship to be strong in both domains, self and other.
Marvelous. Well, I so appreciated our time together, and I just wanted to let the audience know that you told me during the break that the 101 Things book is going to be an audio book coming out next year.
Yes, we're excited about that. That's brand new development just this week.
Excellent. Congratulations. But in the meantime, I encourage people to buy the book and read it. It's sitting here right here. It's got a picture of two people holding hands and looking. I mean, the hands, I shouldn't say the two people holding hands. The cover is the hands. And they're not grasping and clutching each other. You can see the fingers intertwined, but they're loose enough that there's freedom to move the hands in and out, which to me is the ideal relationship. So I thank you both so much for being on the show. And folks, go to their website, bloomwork.com. Thank you. My pleasure. So, folks, I want to tell you about an event that's coming up that will also fill you up, body, mind, and spirit. It's the Celebrate Your Life Conference happening in Phoenix, Arizona, the weekend of November 6th through the 9th, and I will be there. I'm so looking forward to seeing Greg Braden, Dan Millman, Arielle Ford, Michael and Ricky Beckwith, Joan Borisenko, Joe Dispenza, Andy Dooley, who else? Gene Houston, Barbara Marks Hubbard, Barry Goldstein, Ayanna Van Zandt, and then a special tribute to our dear Wayne Dyer, who passed back in August of 2015. And if you want to learn more about it, you go to Mishka, M-I-S-H-K-A, productions.com. And my guest next week is a dear friend of mine. His name is Kirk Coons, and he was on my show earlier, I think it was last year, the year before, and he wrote a book called A Million Steps. He walked the Camino, which is this 500 or 800-kilometer walk between Spain and France, and he did it a second time this past, and he's going to be embarking on another trip to India. I'm looking forward to having him back on the show to talk about his grand adventures. And also the last thing to let you know is that the music that ushers us into the show and leads us out of the show, called Only You, was created by my friends Rick Danzine and Deborah Lee of Lyra Project, LYRAproject.com. So until next week, I thank you, I bless you, I love you. Namaste.
Thank you for joining us here on It's All About Relationships on Vivid Life Radio, opening your heart and mind to the possibilities that are there for you to create a life that is filled with love. Until next week, wishing you healthy and fulfilling relationships and sending hugs from here.
What does your vivid life look like? What does it feel like to be living a vivid life every single day? How do you start? What's the first step for you personally to make the shift that you've been seeking? Find out now. Vivid Life. It's a happier, healthier, wealthier state of being. Get there today by following us on Facebook, Twitter, or subscribing to our free inspirations in your inbox at vividlife.me.
Are you ready to create the life of your dreams, filled with joy and abundance? Imagine surrounding yourself with the world's top spiritual teachers and visionaries that will teach you their secrets to living a successful, healthy, and joyful life. Join Ayanla Van Zandt, Marianne Williamson, Greg Braden, Neil Donald Walsh, Michael Beckwith, and over 25 life-changing best-selling authors at this year's Celebrate Your Life Conference in beautiful Phoenix, Arizona. Visit celebrateyourlife.org for more information. That's celebrateyourlife.org, and reserve your seat now.